issues, etc. What does this mean? We want to hear from you. Why do you listen? How has it helped you? What are your favorite topics? Who are your favorite guests? And what makes Issues Etc. unique? Please leave your thoughts about this worldwide outreach on the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8382. Be sure to give us your first name and tell us where you're from. Issues Etc. What does this mean? 618-223-8382.
Well, talk about bucking a trend. The term now, it's a political term of art, war on women. It's quite common. It's been with us now for, I think, in the parlance of our politics, for about a year and a half. But it is firmly entrenched. It's a way of thinking about women politically, a way about thinking about men and the entire body politic and women's place in it. But is it true? Is there a war on women? Our guest for the next 10 minutes of the program says, no, there is a war, but it's not on women, but on women's fertility. Dr. Jennifer Oback-Morse is a regular guest, founding president of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she's author of the book Smart Sex and Love in Economics. Jennifer, welcome back.
Hi, Todd.
You delivered these remarks at the Howard Center recently. It was written up several places where you said, it's not a war on women. It is a war on women's fertility. What did you mean, and how did those comments go over?
Well, it was a conference that the Howard Center sponsored, and that was held in Washington, D.C., on Capitol Hill, actually. And we had in the audience, in the live audience, there were probably a little over 100 people, I would say, and probably a third of them were in their 20s. Capitol Hill staffers and interns and people like that. And people don't realize, you know, people in St. Louis don't realize that how young a congressional staffer is. You know, there are a lot of 20-somethings in policymaking. And I had it in my mind, Todd, that I wanted to speak to those 20-somethings. And, the heck with the politicians and the grown-ups and whatnot. Because I think there is a war on women's fertility, that women are allowed to participate in public life as long as we agree to act like men, as long as we agree to chemically neuter ourselves during our peak childbearing years, then we can have a job, then we can have higher education. But if we insist on having a baby during our 20s, which is our peak fertility time, the best time for a woman to have a baby is her early to mid-20s, if we do what our bodies want us to do, we're going to be in big trouble in higher education and the job market. And so that's the conflict that I was calling attention to. And I have to tell you that the reaction from the young people in that audience was very positive. I looked out there, Todd, and they were smiling. They were nodding. The older people, not as much. So one of my discussants was David Brooks of the New York Times. And I think he was slightly stunned by what I had to say, because he really only made one kind of cryptic comment about my remarks. He said, "Well, I think Dr. Morse is talking about the world as she wishes it was, rather than the world as it actually is." And I thought to myself, "Well, gee, that's funny. And in the world that I live in, sex makes babies. Now, Mr. Brooks, what world are you living in where sex doesn't make babies?" So that's the short version of how people reacted to it, at least on this occasion, Todd.
But Brooks' comment does actually highlight something, doesn't it? I mean, it highlights that the received wisdom is that sex ought not to make babies, unless, of course, you've got all the other career building, all of the other superstructure of your career ready to go. You're ready to take a break. You know you can come back to that career as soon as the baby stuff is out of the way and you've got the kid ensconced in daycare. I mean, he seems to reflect that common mentality for women, and that is, it's not normative that women should be procreating in their 20s.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And what I was trying to call attention to is the fact that that really puts a woman at war with her own body, you know, because our peak fertility is during our 20s. If we postpone it and postpone it, you know, we're going to be menopausal by the time we get ready to have children. The other part of it, of course, is that we're doing all this career planning partly because of the way the job market's structured, but also partly because we're afraid of divorce. So we're only we only feel okay about having a baby when we feel like we could take care of the baby on our own if we had to. So what it amounts to is that we won't get married and have kids until we're ready to get divorced and have kids on our own, which is really kind of crazy. And but that's the corner we have painted ourselves into with a whole culture that is built around the concept of women's equality. And the women's equality we're talking about is labor market equality with a group of people who never, ever give birth. That would be you, men, right? We want to have perfect equality in the labor market with men, and we want to have non-procreative sex. We want to have those two things. And that, as appealing as both of those things may be, we have really created a dead end for ourselves. We've painted ourselves into a corner. And that's what I was trying to call attention to. And that's what the younger people are smiling and nodding about, because they're relieved that somebody's finally pointing this out and talking about it, because they're the ones who are trapped by it. People our age, thought we could pull this off. And the fact that problems of all kinds have mounted up, we're not really quite prepared to admit that we were wrong when we tried to create this non-procreative world. And so I think a lot of us, of our generation, baby boomers and a little bit younger, have some letting go to do, to let go of the fact that the ideas we started our lives with have not worked out very well, and we need to do something different. And the younger people aren't attached to those ideas in the same way, and they're ready. They're ready to let go of it.
What is your response to the health and human care mandate that portrays contraception and employer-paid contraception as preventative care?
Well, honestly, it's deeply offensive. It's deeply offensive to say that pregnancy is an illness, that pregnancy is a disease, and that has to be prevented like measles or tuberculosis or something. I mean, pregnancy is a normal function of a woman's body. It is a healthy, normal human process. And for the federal government to declare it an illness is, first of all, factually incorrect, and second of all, deeply offensive to me as a woman. And to me, that's why I say there's a war against women's fertility. That's where women should be jumping up and down and screaming. The Sandra Flukes of the world are demanding contraception so that they can sterilize the sexual act, so that they can act like men. I don't consider it freedom to be forced to be something other than what I am. What I am is a woman, right? And I spent most of my life trying to avoid procreating, when really and truly that was the thing that turns out to make you the most happy and the most fulfilled. And it's certainly the thing that's most distinctively female. So the idea that we are expected to suppress all of that, and that somehow enhances our femaleness, or that somehow supports us as women, that's just crazy. I just can't let that go by without comment. It's completely nuts.
The vision, so to speak, of the war on women crowd is, as you've laid it out so nicely here, that sex is disconnected entirely from procreation, and that the life of a woman ought to be first prioritizing upon herself, then maybe, and her career, then maybe on a husband, and then possibly on children later on. You say there is an alternative vision. What would that look like? I mean, many people can't even imagine a world that doesn't fit that model. What would the alternative be?
Well, the alternative vision, Todd, is that the human person is not meant to maximize income. You know, the ultimate vision and the ultimate good of the human person is not to enhance your career and maximize your income and your power and your prestige. The ultimate good of the human person is to love and be loved. The human person is meant for love. That's the deepest part of who we are, right? And so it's our ability to love one another that really makes us who we are. And married life and the complementarity of the sexes, where a man and a woman come together, each to complete the other, right? And through their love to create new life, that is, in a sense, the highest. It's not. I don't want to say it's the highest thing a person can do, because there are many forms of love and many acts of love, but the marital embrace and the fruitfulness of the marital embrace is a symbol of the fact that love is itself a life-giving reality, right? And it's a reality that's built into the human body. If we would just look at it, we would see that the structure of the universe is built on love. And so that's, I think, what the alternative vision looks like. And obviously, this is the deepest part of the Christian vision. And I think most Christian denominations would agree with that. I mean, I'm speaking as a Roman Catholic, as you know, but I think you and your Lutheran friends have no problem with what I'm saying. This is common to all Christian beliefs. That the deepest meaning of the human person is to love and be loved. And I think that it's time that we quit hiding our religious views out of some kind of misplaced view of good manners or something, you know, like it's bad manners to talk about religion. The fact is, our vision of the human person is much more appealing than the vision of the human person that says you're just out there to get as much as you possibly can for yourself. And I think if you put it out there, young people are attracted to it because that's really what they want for themselves, because it calls out to something that's deep within every person. Everybody wants to love and be loved, and everyone wants to believe that their sexual acts, for example, are meaningful and significant. And, you know, what the Planned Parenthood crowd and the Sandra Fluke's people and all these people, what they think is that there's no meaning at all to sex except whatever you might happen to assign to it. And in the end, there's just nothing there. And if we will express ourselves, I think people will be drawn to what we have to say.
Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse is founding president of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. You can find out more about the Ruth Institute under the Listen On Demand page at issuesetc.org. Thanks, Jen.
You're welcome, Todd.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we're going to talk with Bobby Ross Jr. of Get Religion about a St. Louis Post-Dispatch story about a pastor accused of molesting teenage girls. Folks, we still have 19 days left in the year, and we need your help to help us make budget for 2012. We're currently about $40,000 short of making that budget. Our listeners have always helped us reach our budget and end the year in the black, and you can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by making a secure online donation at issuesetc.org. You can also donate by check. Make your check payable to Issues Etc. Send it to Issues Etc., Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. As a way of saying thanks, we'll send you a CD with a sermon that I've preached on the birth of Christ and another on the confession of St. Peter. We'll also send you a CD, Lutheran Service Book, Hymns and Services. Thanks for listening, and thanks for thinking of us at the end of 2012. I'm Todd Wilkin. I'll talk with you tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
You can listen to Issues Etc. live and on demand with the new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. You can get these apps at our website, issuesetc.org. Give us a call, send us an email, or follow us on Facebook or Twitter. Issues Etc. in the palm of your hand. The new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. Download today at issuesetc.org.
There's an app for that.
A Savior Who is Christ the Lord, a Christmas sermon preached by Pastor Todd Wilkin.
This child's soft infant flesh will one day be the sacrifice that pays for our sins.
And for any size year-end donation, we'll send you a CD of this sermon and a sermon preached by Todd on the confession of Peter. You can make a year-end online gift today at issuesetc.org. Thanks for listening, and thanks for keeping us in mind at the end of the year.